No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Good evening and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in and be part of the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype questions to BBSRADIOPR. We have a very special guest tonight, but first let me welcome my wonderful co-host, Maria Sanchez. Maria, how are you?
Good afternoon from the West Coast. I'm good.
Yeah,
thank you.
I know. Maria's pointing out that I say good evening because it's nighttime here on the East Coast. But we know all you folks out on the West Coast are still enjoying what I hope is a perfectly sunny and wonderful afternoon.
Unfortunately, it is. We had rain in the forecast this week and it never came. And we need precipitation like you can't believe. We're embroiled in another drought and all the wildfires that are a result of that. We've been suffering, California,
well,
especially
got,
Southern California.
We've got so much rain out here on the East Coast that we'd be glad to share it with you if we could.
I wish you would.
You know, I'm sure that someday the technology will exist to do exactly that. But North Carolina and South Carolina are still struggling from floods and of course, the tsunami and the earthquake this week were terrible, and our hopes and prayers go out to all those people that were affected. That was just a horrific situation.
And I'm sorry I missed the program again last week with my travels.
Well, that's okay.
I was in Boston for 72 hours total, literally feet on the ground. And so to get back before Monday morning, I had a faculty meeting Monday morning, and I had to fly Sunday night, so I apologize.
Well, that's okay, and we had a lively show there. Doug even chimed in a little bit. I'm sure he got a lot of hate mail this week, but he gave his opinion of the situation, which is always colorful and interesting. So and Deborah was on the show, so we had a good show, but we did, of course, miss you as we always do.
Thank you.
Tonight, we have a great guest, Dr. Kristen Gregory. He's the one of the 10 children of the Gregory family, of the great stand-up comedian, activist, comic genius, Dick Gregory. We had a man from the University of Wisconsin who is writing a book on Dick's life. It's hard to keep up. Kristen will fill us in, but it's hard to keep up with all the stuff that's happening around his father, because this was such a civil rights icon, and people are doing things all over the place, including us. We're going to have a celebration at Arena Stage if you live in the Washington area.
Because the professor's coming and I'm coming.
Right. Professor's just coming all the way from Wisconsin, and Marie is coming all the way from California.
Los Angeles.
So, yes. You know, if you're, and Dr. Dr. Gregory would tell us, I think there are several people coming from Philadelphia and other places. So yeah, if you're anywhere and you want to come, this is going to be a great celebration, and it's going to be, you're going to get to see a great play that's getting great reviews. And we only have a dozen or so tickets left. So,
oh my gosh. Congratulations. I'm so happy. Yeah. So yeah, that's the point too. Is statehoodnow.org is where you can get the tickets to Friday, October 12th, which would have been Dick Gregory's 86th birthday, because he passed away last August. May he rest in peace. And the parallels between Dr. Gregory's father and mine are interesting. They were both born in the same year, and they passed away within a month of each other.
Wow.
Last year. I know all too familiarly what it feels like to be without my dad. But and I know, Michael, you suffered the loss of your father a long time ago.
Yeah. And you still think about it. It never goes away. These are the people that influence your life the most. And, you know, and we're going to bring Dr. Gregory on. But I got to tell you, the couple of children that I've met in the Gregory family, oh, what an influence he was on them, because they're still out there trying to make a better world, and they give and give and give. And we're honored to have Dr. Gregory on the show with us. Dr. Gregory, welcome.
Hello, 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 Senator Brown. How are you, sir? Maria Sanchez, a pleasure to be on. It just feels good just to say the name Shadow Politics. It sounds like my dad might have named this show. This fits right in the Gregory DNA right here. So I feel right at home. Let's get right to it. Let's start figuring it all out, folks. This is wonderful. You know,
and he did have an influence on every, you know, I've told you this story, Kristen, that he came to my little white college in suburban Washington 45 years ago. He slayed us. We laughed so hard we couldn't breathe. And then he left us thinking. And that really was his genius, wasn't it? That he could use comedy to make you think. There was always truth inside of what he said.
Absolutely.
And you know, yeah, and we all relate to that, right? It's like, Kristen's younger sister, Ayana, is a singer. And again, she's out there. I've met her many times performing at social justice things. And again, that's music is a universal thing. It brings us together. It touches all of us. So she carries on in the family tradition, and I know you do too.
No question. No question about it. Laughter, music. Edutainment. My dad was a master of taking you from one end of the spectrum, the emotional spectrum, to the other end of the emotional spectrum. And whether you got it immediately or delayed, you always got I used to call them boomerang messages, because right when you thought you figured it out, you realized there were more layers and more layers. So it kept coming back again and again, and just for a lifetime. So all of us, Greg, there's 10 of us Gregory children, as you mentioned, all of us are, we're not just nature versus nurture. So it was in our genes, activism, but also we were nurtured that way. We spent all of our summers in Washington, D.C. from the age of single digits, getting locked up in front of the South African embassy. And my dad just had a trunk full of signs for different occasions that were near and dear to him. Right. And it was like ducklings following their parents and going out in front and holding signs up. And it just, our what did you do this summer essays, whenever we got back to school each year, were always quite colorful and interesting. The teachers waited with bated breath to hear what did the Gregory kids do this summer. So it was also activism. It really, really was. It was the industry, so to speak, that our family was in and continues to be in. And my dad, all the way up to the age of 84, he had 10 shows scheduled the week that we lost him. And Maria, I heard you mention you mentioned to me before, kind of the alignment of the birth and loss of our parents. And and Michael, I heard what you said as well. And there's no rule books for it. And practicing for 20 years as a chiropractor in DC and seeing countless folks all over the spectrum lose a parent, it just is, it's different for everybody, and it kind of, it ebbs and flows. But what I'm setting up here is just to say, heartfelt gratitude and thank you to the folks out here who have just really made it profoundly easier for us Gregory children with the love and support. And then all of the projects, there's so much to sink our teeth into to keep my dad's legacy alive. You mentioned Turn Me Loose, which we'll talk about in a moment, the phenomenal stage play playing here in DC, my dad's new paperback, Defining Moments in Black History, which is his 26th book. The paperback just came out this month. Duke University just announced a Dick Gregory class for spring of 2019. The documentary comes out first quarter of 2019. The feature film, we're starting the process of working on the screenplay. So it's just a tremendous, I mean, who gets this? I pinch myself regularly to say, right, holy smokes. And my father was aware all these things were in motion. So they weren't things that, because of his death, got started. That wasn't the catalyst for this. So he had input on all of it. So this is continuing to be his brand and his control over his message. And so it's just a wonderful thing to sit here as a proud son. And I was my dad's manager for the past 20 years. So it's a special place for me to be. And I still get my marching orders from him every, he would call me at 5 a.m. I still hear him in my head every morning at 5 a.m. with my marching orders of what to get to for the day. So there's no sleeping in for me.
Well, I can't imagine that you could even have a career, that wouldn't be your career, managing this prolific individual who happens to be your father that you love more than life itself.
Absolutely.
I hope we're going to get to some of your work that you've done as a human being too. I find it fascinating about your take on plastics and toxicities and how you choose where to travel and sort of things. But does the Dick Gregory Foundation help you with these other projects, or is that something, another entity in and of itself?
So the Dick Gregory to answer your first question here, Marie, I've actually left my practice for the next year and a half to work on all of these projects because it's profoundly important. Yes, it's profoundly important to get it right.
Manufactured 28 hours in a day.
And I miss it. I miss my practice. I mean, I've been a chiropractor in Washington, D.C. for the past 20 years. I love my patient base to life, and I know it was a difficult decision for them. It was certainly a difficult decision for me, but this legacy was bigger than me. It was bigger than all of us Gregory children. We never tried to fill my dad's shoes. We always said we wanted to keep them clean and get them out there so people could see them and learn from them, and we just wanted to support him. And we did that in life, and we continue to do that in his transition. He's a spiritual beast, and he's a force just to be reckoned with. When he transitioned on the 19th, well, a day and a half later, really, because it was late on the 19th, so almost a little over 24 hours later is when we had the total solar eclipse. And my dad was always into astrology and astronomy, numerology. And so that was he had been excited for the last 2 years about that eclipse. And many of us felt like he rode that tail on out right on up to heaven to start giving marching orders and just guiding from above. And he's busier now than many of my dad's near and dear friends call me regularly to be like, hey, I'm still hearing. But that's all those seeds. See, I'm a scientist, so I understand spirituality, but then I also try to say, how much of this is just, we know what he would have said in these scenarios, so we're hearing them. Whatever it is, I'm just enjoying the contact. But absolutely, the foundation assists. We're really growing the foundation out at this point. So right now, it's really a real lean team. The family's very involved. You mentioned my sister, Ayana, my brother, Johanse, my sister, Michelle. There's lots of doctors, professors, lawyers in the family. So we've all really circled the wagon because it takes a village. Well, it takes an entire family and the village to keep Dick Gregory's legacy afloat. And we're thrilled to have the options that we have right now before us.
Well, and I've got to tell you just about what you were just saying about how he got spread so far. His legacy continues to spread, that in putting together this event at Arena Stage and calling people and asking them to come, you know, purchase tickets and come to this thing, I can't tell you how many times, Christian, people have said, I was arrested with Dick. I stood in front of the South African embassy with Dick. So many people in Washington have such positive memories of him and the work he did and what they did with him and how they were connected to him. And it's just been an amazing experience just to be involved in that. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to spirituality, I went to a service this morning at Brown Memorial AME Church in Northeast Washington. It was Social Justice Day. And among other things, they quoted my favorite quote from the Bible, which is from the Old Testament, Micah. And it is, "What is your God ask of you except to seek justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with the Lord?" And you know, all I could think about is this is your, I didn't know your father well, but this is what I knew of him, that
absolutely,
he always sought justice, that I know he loved kindness, and I know that because he was kind, and kind people always cherish kindness, and he was humble. I've got to tell you, I thought he was a civil rights icon, and the first time I met him, he talked to me like we had known each other our whole lives. He was such a genuine, generous human being, and I see he's passed that on to his children.
Well, thank you for that.
Well,
thank you for that, Senator. So the Duke. So five universities reached out to us immediately, interested in housing my father's papers. We're just not there yet. There's too much going on right now, and we just want to kind of let some things settle and get in place. But we went to Duke, actually with Turn Me Loose. So the team of the producers with Turn Me Loose. We went to Duke because Duke was interested in bringing Turn Me Loose to their campus. So we went, we had three or four meetings there. Professor Mark Anthony Neal, who runs Duke's African-American Studies, African-American Studies, he just is a huge, he's a student of Dick Gregory like so many folks, and he was just so eager to get the message out that he started fundraising to raise the money that was responsible to get a class get a course taught at Duke University, and how that works. If enough people attend the course, then the course can become part of the regular schedule. And so the Gregory children will be back and forth down there. It's a whole multitude of other entertainers who have patterned their life after how my dad patterned his entertainment and activism, and they'll be down there participating. It's going to be open to the entire, so it's not just open to Duke students. It's going to be in one of their largest halls, and it's open to the community. So all the surrounding high schools and other colleges and universities will have access to this course material. So it's going to be rooted in laughter, truth, justice. We're going to have to talk about statehood now, because that's a travesty that was near and dear to my dad's heart. And I mentioned that when you first called and we spoke about doing this tribute on his birthday, and it was an honor to partner up with you for that, because this was something that we never missed an opportunity to have activism interwoven. Every Thanksgiving, we lived in Plymouth, Massachusetts, so for 12 hours during the day, we'd go and protest out the Mayflower for the unjust treatment of American Indians, and then we would come home much later and eat a meal of thankfulness that we were out there making a difference. So activism was always interwoven to everything we did. So to have this opportunity on what is my dad's 86th birthday, to partner with such a noble cause and a charge forward for all of us who have lived here for a lifetime in D.C. and have adopted D.C. as our home, it's just an outrage that we don't have representation. Right. I feel good that we're moving in the right direction, and what a wonderful partner for my dad's 86th.
Well,
and
thank
Michael,
you.
Do you have normally, Christian, Michael opens the broadcast with what's happened in the last week with statehood. Did you have any updates on that about
the petition? Well, there's nothing. We got five new co-sponsors that we announced last week, Maria, when you weren't here. But this week, Congress has been solidly embroiled.
They got a little something on their plate.
Yeah, so they've been a little preoccupied, but we'll get back on it. We're going to go through a period right now where it's hard to get meetings up there because there's campaigning going on. You know, we have an election, folks. No matter
exactly
who you vote for,
get out and vote.
Get out and vote, because, you know, it's funny. I went to a forum the other day, and they asked a young person stood up and said, well, why should I vote? Our voting, it doesn't mean anything. And I said to them, when you vote for everybody that's like you. When you go out there, the reason that we don't cut Social Security, but we do cut education, is because old people vote and young people don't. So every time you don't vote for, you let your sex, your race, your income level, your position in life, whether you're rural or urban, your education,
socioeconomic status.
Right. You let all the people that are like you down, because that's what those guys look at. They really do, you know, they focus on staying in office. And it's the only way we have to actually reach out to them and let them know how we feel and what we want. So even if you go and you write in your grandmother, go and do it. And by the way,
And you have to be registered to vote. And in my opinion, if you don't vote, your opinion doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
I don't care. You got to back it up with your civic duty and privilege.
Well, you know, and my little Italian grandmother voted every time she could in every election, and she ingrained that in us because she was born in the 1890s and she didn't have the right to vote.
So
yes, when she got the right to vote, and she never thought of it as she always thought of it as an obligation as much as it was a right. And let me tell you something, she used to dress up and put on her gloves and her hat well into her 80s.
It was an outing.
Yes, it was. And she would be the first one. If God help you, you know, if she asked a neighbor, did you vote? We'd all sit there as children and go, oh, please say yes. Please say yes.
Someone's going to be in trouble.
Yes, someone's going to be in trouble. And just so you know, in reaching out to people about this event for Dick Gregory, we just happened to come across the fact that President Obama said that Dick Gregory was his favorite comic. So we invited him to come Friday night. I don't really expect him to show up, but we sent him a formal invitation.
Nice.
To come because we heard that Dick was his favorite comic of all time.
Class act, very much class act. I just want a quick qualifier. His official position is Richard Pryor and Dick Gregory are his two favorite comics. And I have some comics, and I have so much love for Richard Pryor that I share that they're both my two favorite comedians as well.
Don't we all, yes.
And in this town, as far as we learn to always expect the unexpected, so I won't be startled. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was there for the opening day. We didn't know she was coming, and she sat up there right next to my mom and seemed thoroughly entertained. So so I wouldn't be, nothing surprises me anymore. So class act and sending the invitation. So many millennials for two election cycles, they saw what seemed to be easy victories for their presidential election with the Barack Obama, both terms. And I think some of them got a little disenfranchised. They thought this election stuff is easy. It always works out the way it's supposed to work out, or the way they think it'll work out. So they got a wake-up call for certain. And I hope we remember this feeling as we approach Election Day to realize it is an obligation. It's not an option to circle the wagons and make a difference. Because I agree with you, Maria. If you don't vote, your opinion simply doesn't matter.
It doesn't. Well, and I feel rude saying that because...
But it's the truth.
I mean, in general, everybody's opinion should matter, but as Michael just so pointed out, if you're not part of the constituency, they're not going to care about what you think or feel. And frankly, if you don't take the time to do what needs to be done, I don't care what you think or feel.
I'm there with
you. Well, you know what you said about young people, I've got to tell you that one time when my son was about 10 years old, he said to me that the Yankees were in the World Series, and he said he hoped that they won. And I said, why, Nick? And he said, because they never win, Dad. They always try, but they never win. And I laughed, and I said, because if you know the history of the team, they've won more World Series than any other team. But he had only been following baseball for 2 years. So that was his frame of reference.
That was his reality.
It's all relative.
All relative. So that's true. But yeah, you really got to get out there and vote. And, you know, it's sad here in the District of Columbia in the primary, which is really the election here in District
in this town. Absolutely.
The decider.
Only 19% of the registered voters came out.
Yeah, that's painful.
Terrible.
That's painful.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Well, and Christian, you early on said something about statehood and the atrocity of that. And over the years that I've been on the program with the senator, I've remarked about how people aren't outraged and how they've gotten more complacent. But it seems like there's been a paradigm shift, I would say, in the last 6 months or so. Yes. I've noticed that more people are becoming passionate about it instead of like, well, this is the way it's always been, you know, resigning themselves to the reality. So I'm hoping that it's not just my perception. I'm hoping it is a reality.
I hope it's momentum as well, because it's time. I mean, it's time. Yeah. And unfortunately, there's not enough people outside of D.C. that really feel our pain or understand our pain, but it is a disservice. It's an absolute disservice. And we just need to keep shows like this fine show that you all have here, Shadow Politics. We just all need to do our part to make sure the rest of the country knows that this is a disservice and it's not acceptable.
Well, the signers of the petition would suggest such. What I have perceived is it's ignorance. People don't know.
They don't.
And once they do know, then they're like, what? I mean, they're incredulous. So I think it's a lot about informing the public.
Absolutely. And that's what we're doing here. And we have on the line with us one of the great Washingtonians, Keith Silver. Keith, are you there?
Yes, hi. Hello, Senator Brown, and to your co-host and Dr. Gregory. Hello to you all. It was an interesting conversation that you was briefly touching on statehood. I share those concerns. As you know, I'm a statehood activist along with yourself and others, Senator Brown. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And thanks. And a dear friend of Dick Gregory's. You
absolutely.
I don't think I ever saw him at a statehood thing that you weren't there with him.
Yes,
you were there
with him every time. Yes, sir. I was very, very fortunate to be in the company of Mr. Gregory. He actually took a lot of time with me and was patient in my development and was very instrumental to refining some of my activism and causes. And I affectionately refer to him as my mentor, because that's really a it doesn't comprehend the friendship that we had over the years. He quite frankly, was a unique personality and unique man, as we all know, on the national and international level. But many people in this city and across the nation had the opportunity to actually call him friend. And he was just a great man on and off stage. He's, quite frankly, he's unparalleled. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, Senator Brown, while I have a brief word, a lot of times people, you know, they know about Mr. Gregory's international and national fame, which is justly due. But from the outset, the term comedian, when he was referred to, even back in the day, was absurdly, it just was a narrow word to describe his versatility, which was always his keynote. As we all know, he's from the early 60s on, at the height of his career. And while he had 10 children in tow, he became preoccupied with the civil rights movement. And I think that's a rare characteristic that we can't even find in people today. We will commit to causes as long as we don't have to make a personal sacrifice. But when we have to personally sacrifice, such as Mr. Gregory, he put his career on the line. He was the highest paid black entertainer at the time. And of course, his career suffered, but he did this without the knowledge of knowing he would even be blessed even more abundantly. So I respect the man for that single moment in time where he put everything on the line for justice and truth and to make America better for us all. Yeah, he's just a great man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said, Keith. Well said.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Keith, because that's absolutely true, and I think we all feel that. And you know, even in the very end of his life, the last time I saw him was at an event for D.C. statehood and emancipation Day breakfast. And for those of you who may not know, Emancipation Day is our only legal holiday here in the District of Columbia. It's when Abraham Lincoln purchased 4,700 slaves and set them free prior to the Emancipation Proclamation. And we celebrate it. And of course, part of that celebration is always the fact that we point out the fact that we're still not equal citizens here in the District of Columbia. So there we were at breakfast. Everybody was hugging each other. We were singing Kumbaya and talking about how wonderful we were. And when Dick Gregory got up to speak, it was, you know, he was one of the luminaries in the room, and he got up to speak and everybody fell silent. And he said, you know, he was still, it would have been so easy to just chime in with everybody else. But he said, why are we celebrating? Why are 150 people in a room talking about the disenfranchisement of hundreds of thousands of American citizens and having a party? We should have a party when we have 150,000 people standing and talking about this. And
absolutely.
So even when it was uncomfortable, he always spoke truth to power. And what an amazing man he was in that respect.
Sometimes so even more so.
Yeah, I was say he was like scolding you, and he had every right to do so. Because,
scolding you with love, though. Scolding you with
exactly.
love.
Exactly.
It's always
care,
rooted in kindness and care and passion.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. And everybody in the room loved and respected him, and he understood that. And that's how he delivered his message always. You know, I've got to tell you. I told Kristen this when we met in my office. I came home and told my wife one day, because I ran into him and talked to him for a few minutes, and he thanked me for my activism. And I came home and I said, I can't believe it. Dick Gregory thanked me for what I'm doing, given all the millions of things that he does.
I love it. I love it. Well, that was accurate. Thank I'd like you. To piggyback on that and thank you again, because it's profoundly important. It's not an easy job, and sometimes it feels quite thankless. And so we got to keep the momentum going. So kudos to you.
Well, thanks. And he was such a generous guy, and so is Keith Silver. Are you still on the phone, Keith? Keith's out there marching for everything. And we appreciate all your service, Keith. Thanks for calling in. And we look forward to seeing you Friday, because we know you're going to be there.
Friday's going to be special. Friday's going to be special. It's like a family reunion. We're all getting together. And what a wonderful way to set. So last, on my dad's 85th birthday, that was the first birthday us Gregorys in the world were without Dick Gregory physically here with us. Turn Me Loose, the second iteration of it, was playing with Joe Morton in Los Angeles. So although my dad passed away two birthdays ago, in a sense, I got to be with my dad and hug my dad and watch someone become my dad on a stage. And it's pretty profound and pretty special. And for certain, we don't take that for granted. And so I'm excited for this 86th birthday. I'm excited for what Edwin Lee Gibson is doing. His iteration of Dick Gregory is special. I've explained it to people. It's the same engine, different calibration. And it just is, it shows how beautifully well written Gretchen Law's playwright is. It just is, it's gripping. It captures all the right moments in my dad's life that were those watershed moments. And he had so many of them because he was fearless. He was always willing to go with the path with the most resistance for the most change. And for a lifetime, that's the direction that he moved. So Turn Me Loose, which the name of the play is based on my dad's relationship, close relationship with Medgar Evers. When Medgar Evers was tragically gunned down, shot down by an assassin's bullet in front of his home, the last words he said to his family were, "Turn me loose." And part of the reason that has such a heavy weight on my father's life for his lifetime is he was supposed to be with Medgar Evers that night. Also tragically, the oldest Gregory boy, my oldest brother, Richard Jr., passed away tragically at the age of one. That was the only reason my dad left Megger's side to rush home and be with my mom. And since he was there, so my dad always, there was always a sense of survivor's guilt. And that's part of, I honestly believe, what he frequently would say it would have been an honor to have died with Megger. And part of the extreme hunger striking, a lot of that fearlessness came because he almost acted as if he was on borrowed time or given it an additional time to do good work, because had he not lost his son, almost as if Richard Jr.'s life was sacrificed so Dick Gregory could still do here to be the work that needed to be done. And that had to be one heck of a burden, one heck of a weight for him to deal with for his lifetime. And that's depicted beautifully in the play. And Edwin Lee Gibson, John Carlin, I just can't wait for the DC folks. They've been seeing it in droves. The reviews have been phenomenal. I just can't wait for you all to come and get there and to, what I say, experience it, because it is truly an experience.
Well, you know, along those lines, Christian, and thank you for filling out the story for us, because much of what you've just shared, I haven't uncovered yet in my research. But people who I am talking to about your dad, it's almost a seminal moment, like Michael was mentioning when he saw him out on his campus. A lot of people have their own first impressions. I remember when I ran into him. I remember when I saw him perform. I remember him on the Jack Parr show. I remember him being in the audience. Everyone has a touch point. That's how iconic he was.
It really is. It really is. And a big part of that was, so Megger Evers called my dad and brought him into the civil rights movement in Mississippi, voter registration drives. After that, my dad got a taste of activism, and it was just in his blood from that point on. He decided to go all in. He left comedy, went fully into the civil rights movement, and fully engaged and accepted Dr. King's nonviolent movement. And he theorized, if I'm not going to be violent to people, I also shouldn't be violent to animals. So he became a vegan at that point in his life, and that started his journey into health and wellness and nutrition. So when he did slowly get back into entertaining, he wasn't willing to entertain in unhealthy venues. So he wouldn't do nightclubs or bars or lounges, anywhere where cigarette smoking or alcohol drinking was permitted. He didn't want his fan base to have to come into unhealthy environments. As a result of that, he exclusively started lecturing and performing on college campuses. That's one of the primary reasons that so many people, as you mentioned, Michael, that your dad came to my little white school. He went to every little white school, every big white school, every little black school, every big black school, Latino school. He was everywhere. And when you think about when we're 50 years old, we have children, we have a mortgage. Well, we're not really that open to change. But when we're a freshman or a college student, we're an apt pupil. So to have someone come in and give such a fire charge of a message, it really was unforgettable for so many of these folks. And for their lifetime, since my dad transitioned, the amount of folks who have approached me and said, it starts with, your dad spoke at my school, and then fill in the rest with whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And it just is, it's incredible, because had my dad, not that many people would say, oh, I went and saw your dad at XYZ Comedy Club and it changed my life and this is the reason why. So a lot of these things, as my dad would say, it was the universe at work and the universal flow that brought him that direction. He became a professor to many generations, and it was profoundly impactful.
Well, and he sent so many ships out on the sea. You know, one thing that I always say is that the thing about activism is that once you become an activist, you're always an activist. And that's what he did. He made us. Well, I remember this when he came to talk to my college, he made us feel that, you know, you can sit around and talk about it, but that's not getting it done. You need to get out there and do something.
Do it.
and get involved. And you know, once you start doing that, you always do it. You know, I think that when I look back at my life, for example, I was a volunteer commissioner. I worked at a soup kitchen. Let me tell you, feeding hungry people feels good.
And no question.
And once you get a taste of that, you want to do more of it. You say to yourself, you know, I can go out and make money, or I can do other things. And not that those things are bad, but nothing feels as good as reaching out to somebody that needs help and helping them and feeling like you've contributed some way. And I think that's what he made us all think about doing that.
Except the struggles were huge. I don't want to minimize what you just said, Michael, because I have been a philanthropist my entire life. Mm-hmm. But Dick Gregory, there was harm to be had. I mean, he had to screw up courage to do what he did. And he had to risk saying what people needed to hear, but didn't necessarily want to hear. Yeah. Or were comfortable hearing. Yeah. That's why I admire so much is that it wasn't easy what he did. It was, and the fasting that you mentioned, Christian, I mean, that affected his living.
It ultimately is what he transitioned from. The years of hunger. Now, there's a big, profound difference between fasting, which can have very significant medicinal benefits, and hunger striking and literally starving yourself.
Thank you for making that
distinction. So there's a profound difference. And when you starve yourself, the body eats muscle before it eats fat. So the muscle it typically goes after first is the muscles that line the arteries. And so my dad had advanced cerebral vascular disease for probably the last 15 years that we knew of, that we actually diagnosed with. And a lot of the characteristics of it are very similar to Alzheimer's. And so a lot of that anger that you saw with Dick Gregory later in life, and a lot of millennials only know him from YouTube clips of a silver beard, angry guy. They never knew the calm, cool wit and wisdom that just oozed through his personality from his 40s, 50s, and 60s. And a lot of the projects that we're working on now, some animated cartoon series, some television series, do a great job of introducing folks into the full spectrum of Dick Gregory's life. Because most people, they either know him as a nutritionist, they know him as a comedian, they know him as an activist. There's not a whole lot of people that know the full story of Dick Gregory. So we're excited to tell it, but a profound amount of sacrifice. When you see the play and you see the scene where my dad is the first Black comedian to perform topical comedy in front of a white audience in the Playboy Club, and it just so happens that night that the Playboy Club has been bought out by a group of Southern businessmen, frozen food businessmen, and the anger and fear that comedy on its own is hard enough. You're up there on your own with a mic, with a crowd that may love you, may not. But being up there alone with a crowd that you know for certain hates you because of the color of your skin, that's profound. I mean, I see that scene in the play, and I've seen the play more times than I can count, and I'm always just awestruck by the courage that it had to take for any comedian, male, female, Black, white, just to go out in front of a group that you know despised you simply because of some aspect of your being that you have no control over, and to be able to stand there and be interested in making them laugh. But the truth was, that wasn't his goal. His goal was to use laughter as a tool of enlightenment. And he did it for a lifetime in the most, maybe the best to have ever done it. And I'm mindful this is his son saying that, and we'll let history speak for itself. But it was just, it's phenomenal to witness what he did. And there's no better way to witness it than Turn Me Loose. They've just really captured those watershed moments in Dick Gregory's life.
Well, you know, there was a core of people too at that time. I don't know what's happened to that, whether they still exist and they just have changed, we just don't see them in the same way. But, you know, I often think about Dr. King. You know, you listen to his words just before he was assassinated, and you know this man knew what his fate was going to be, but he went forward anyway. There seemed to be a core of those people. You know, it's funny. Mrs. Brown and I just went to see Spike Lee's new movie, and Harry Belafonte is in it. You know, I was just amazed at to see him because
he's doing well. He's doing well, and he's still engaged. He's still on these folks are like Navy SEALs. They're still out there on the front line. Some of them, and there's no retirement plan in activism,
so
it's a tough life. There's no retirement plan, and it really can kind of beat you up. So I understand and don't hold anything against the folks who have decided to say, wait a minute, I'm getting older. I'm going to go ahead and transition out. Not everyone comes back and doubles down and re-enlists. So for the folks who do, we appreciate their service. For the folks who don't, we say thank you for the sacrifice that you did do because it was profoundly important.
Well, and sometimes when the leaders, if you will, resign or retire or to a life that maybe is not as provocative, that creates a chasm for another generation to step in and fill the blank. Because if somebody's always doing it, there's not that need to necessarily participate in it because that's already been done. But it does create a void, really.
Absolutely.
It's kind of painful because I've seen it in all kinds of organizations where, okay, this is a growing opportunity here by this absence of whomever. So it's change, right? Change.
I'm a big fan of term limits for just that reason, because if we know that the guard is going to be stepping down, then folks prepare to step up and fill that void. But if someone, I'm a healthcare provider. I know all of us mammals have a shelf life, but my dad's energy was such that we all thought he was going to be here forever. No one thought he was ever going anywhere, as irresponsible as that could be. And so the truth of it is that, no, we all need to, on a micro or macro level, need to get engaged, get involved, because it impacts all of our lives, our quality of life, our livelihood, and our well-being. So it is, it's a charge that we all need to, in whatever aspect that works for us, do something to make the world a better place than what we found it.
Well, and that's why the thing at Duke University is so important. You know, we really have to not only encourage younger people to engage and hand the mantle onto them, but we need to show them the way. And certainly the experience of your dad is illuminating to anybody that's interested in being an activist, because he really did do it exactly the right way. Can
Absolutely.
You tell us about the film? The film. Look, if you have not come to Washington, D.C. and gone to the American Museum of African-American Museum of History and Culture, you are really missing something, because it's like a way cool museum.
It really is.
Yeah.
And you should add that I learned the hard way when I was there in April that they're booked out like 3 months.
Yeah.
You need to make reservations to get a ticket.
Go online, make reservations, because it really is. I mean, it really is. It's incredibly well done. My dad got together a group of about 300 people for a private after-hour tour. And it was special to see someone who didn't just read about these folks. We talked about the sacrifice. So Dr. King, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, the Fred Hampton. I mean, to have so many people who were your friend get gunned down in front of you. And that has to, and then later in life, even John Lennon, my dad and John Lennon were dear friends. And that just, I said, in his lifetime, I was with my dad. We were in Barnes & Noble, and he was looking at a book on assassinations. I think it was assassinations since the 20th century. And three-fourths of the people in the book he knew personally.
It just
was mind-boggling to me that there was that much hatred and death and just cowardly acts of violence in one person's lifetime. And this shaped him. I mean, my dad was born in 1932 in St. Louis, and it was October 1932 was the poorest month of the Great Depression. So wealthy people were poor. So people who were poor, as my father's family, well, there was nothing to hand down to them because no one was handing anything down. And that really hardened him. And that's when he realized that humor was wonderful to say something funny to someone before they could say something funny about you. So that's where his timing, his cadence, his energy, his third eye of always being his perception of what was going on around him, 360 degrees, was developed from a very difficult childhood. My dad, due to his malnutrition, was forced to go to a special education school for mentally and physically disabled children because he was so skinny. And black students back in at least in St. Louis in early 1930s and 40s, if they were skinny, they were assumed to have tuberculosis, so they had to go to special schools. So elementary school and middle school, he went to special, and he always had a particular spot in his heart whenever he saw someone with a mental handicap or physical handicap. He always took extra time with them. He would go to them even if they knew who he was or wasn't. And when I later realized that, because he didn't necessarily tell me about his schooling at that point, when I later realized that, I was able to connect the dots and say, this was almost like a homecoming for him. These were the folks that he was protective of. These were his classmates. And there were just so many unique things that it was a unique combination of pressure that was on him that really made him the Jim that he turned out being.
Well, wow. You know, it's funny that you say that too, because I was the class clown. I always say that. I was the guy that gym teachers hated most because I had no athletic ability whatsoever. And I also was the class clown. You know, I was also the guy sticking the basketball under my shirt and walking around.
I love it.
A defense mechanism for me too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I grew up in North New Jersey, and I realized I'm not going to be 6'5" and really tough. I'm going to, you know, so I need to find another way to
and
get
you did.
The guys
you did.
To leave me alone, you know, and we did. And so it's interesting that you say that, but
the things that shape us.
Yes. And the reason I brought up the Smithsonian is because your father's film is going to play there. Is that not
see,
correct?
So I don't want to get out in front of the announcement. So,
Sorry about that. Documentary,
it's called I Am Dick Gregory. It's going to most likely be March of next March 2019. It is going to debut here in D.C. Matter of fact, I will come back on this program with all of the details because it's going to be and I got a seat set aside for the Brown family and the Sanchez family. So hold me to it, and it's going to be special. It's going to be we screened a 30-minute clip of it here in D.C. a few months back at the March on Washington Film Festival. And that's right, we were there together.
Yeah. And it was wonderful.
It's very well done.
And I could see it being an award-winning film when it's done, because it is so well done, you know. And
it's definitely on that trajectory, and that's the buzz already from insiders who have seen it. Turn Me Loose to play. It's on a trajectory for Broadway, and folks are already talking about. We're looking at the potential of Tony Awards and Oscars, and there's records that are being redigitized now and released back out. So my dad never cared about awards and trophies. His award and trophies were making a change, and so we know that the greater society many times, they need things to validate whether they go and pick up the book, whether they go watch the play, whether they go watch the movie. So we're just going to, now that it's a whole team, we're just going to hit them on all fronts, and we're going to see to it that we all charge through this finish line together.
Well, you know.
And I like it that you mentioned, Christian, earlier in our conversation, that this isn't posthumous interest. This was already ongoing. Like the biographer that we had on the program, he got to meet him personally several times. So it wasn't just like, oh man, here was a great man that passed away. What are we going to do about that?
And Professor Ed Schmidt is just doing incredible work. I mean, the research. So not only did he get the opportunity to meet my dad multiple times here in DC, but he also had the opportunity to showcase and present my dad artifacts that he had never seen, like my father's my father's father, my grandfather's birth certificate.
Wow.
And just so he's been able to find things and discover. I explained to Professor Schmidt when I was talking to him, it's like the it's like a genetic test on steroids that he's been able to go back. What is it, 23andMe, where you can go and give your blood and get, well, it's like 23 and 3 million. What he's been able to bring back to the Gregory family has just been, I mean, it's a treasure trove of artifacts that we never would have found. We wouldn't have had the resources to go out. And I've had the absolute luxury and pleasure to read the first few chapters of his book. And it just is, it's one of the many things here that I listed earlier that are just, it's one of the perks of being Dick Gregory's son, that there's so many people that aren't spending money, but passion. You can't buy passion. You've either earned it or you didn't. And definitively, the amount of passion that Dick Gregory has earned is just profound.
Well, you know, I was going to say, his friend John Lennon used to say, the love you take is equal to the love you make. And this man made a lot of love in life.
Absolutely.
So many people love him. And the professor is coming Friday night.
He'll be here.
You should know that Maria put pressure on him when he was on the show. asked him when he was going to finish his book, and got up hemmed and hawed and get back to work on it. So she'll be there.
Well, look at that. You guys are breaking a lot of news here. You're breaking the venues of where movies are going to be. You're breaking the dates of books. This is so we're coming out of the shadows. This is out of the shadow of politics.
We're running out of time. Christian, we're almost out of time. So is there one thing you want to say about your dad that we didn't ask you?
I just want to say, my dad would always say, be loving and lovable. All of these projects, and we're not shaping them this way. Just the reality is they are some of the most loving and lovable things that most people will ever witness in anything that I've ever been a part of. And it's an absolute joy. So I'd like to say thank you to all of the folks in D.C. for all the love and care they took care of they've shared with my father and shown him when he was alive. And they continue to show the family. I'd simply like to say thank you.
Well, and we'd like to say thank you for sharing him with all of us.
Yes.
Especially this event. And we hope we'll see you on Friday. If you're out there, come. I know that Maria and Christian and I will be together, and we hope you come too.
And
we'll see y'all next week.
Tickets.
Go to statehoodnow.org, statehoodnow.org, and that'll lead you right to it. And we're going to leave you tonight. I had never even heard of this artist, Matthew West, but he did a song called Do Something, and it just so much exemplifies to me the way Dick lived his life. So we're going to leave you with this song, and I hope it inspires you. This is in memory of the comic genius and civil rights icon, Dick Gregory. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you Friday.
See you Friday.
This morning, saw a world full of trouble. Now I thought, how do we ever get so far down? And how's it ever gonna turn around? So I turned my eyes to heaven. I thought, God, why don't you do something?
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.